Good evening. You're listening to KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio out of Round Mountain in Bella Vista. This is Jim Dowling. I'm the host of Write Stuff, and that's a show where I bring in local writing talent from Reading. And tonight, my very special guest is Eric Nansen. He's a poet. Thanks for coming in, Eric.
Thank you, Jim.
Yeah, Eric's got a couple of books of poetry out. They're both available on Amazon. Titles are Poetry for Real People, The Road Less Taken, and Poetry for Real People, Emotional Roller Coaster. Now, Eric, you've I see on the back of The Road Less Taken a description of your poetry, that it's different, that it's not quite as abstract as a lot of poetry. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, that's why I chose to call it Poetry for Real People, because I find with myself and with other people that some poetry, a lot of poetry, they just call it what they call abstract prose, which just means people kind of come up with these, you know, abstract thoughts, and it's hard to follow.
Sure.
And you end up sitting trying to think of what the heck they're talking about and thinking about it so hard that you get lost and you're like several words behind, and you're trying to, and then you just, at some point, a lot of the times you just give up.
Yeah.
You know, and so
your poetry is easy to digest.
Yeah, that's what I found. And people who, you know, the comment I hear all the time is, well, I don't normally like poetry, but I like yours.
Good.
So I kind of see mine is really like short stories that rhyme almost. And that's the other thing. Mine rhyme. It's not that I try to do it. It's how it comes out of me. I just don't fight it. You know, I think in the kind of intellectual society, like if it rhymes, it's kind of looked down upon a little bit, but I really don't care. I have the same thing with my artwork. I've always teetered on the craft, fine art line, and I really don't care. I just make what I like.
Sure, sure. So, well, if we get a chance, we'll talk a little bit about your other interests too, because you're quite prolific as an artist. Your poetry covers a wide spectrum of topics. Some of it's funny, some of it's very poignant. You do what I call cowboy poetry. So let's kick it off with something. Why don't you, anything you want to read?
Yeah, I'll start with my father passed away in the early 2000s, and that's what seemed to prompt this. I didn't used to write poetry, and all of a sudden I just got hit with a wave, and I started writing poetry like crazy. And I was actually building my house at the time, and it was raining, and I was up on my 38-foot high roof putting the sheathing down, and I kept scribbling poems on the plywood as it was raining, and they just came to me. I was doing 3, 4, 5 a day, and I just couldn't seem to stop.
5 a day?
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
And I wasn't even trying. I'd just be working, and they would start coming out, and I just, instead of fighting it, I would just like said, write it wherever I could. So, this is one of the first ones I wrote, and it's called My Father's Boots. Weathered and worn, their faded history forlorn, they sit quietly in the corner of the closet. They still smell of oils and the sweat from the toils of the good man that once wore them. The soles worn paper thin keep his memory within their leathery walls of remembrance. The laces broken and frayed now somehow feel betrayed by the man who has left them behind. To fill these boots, no, it can't be done, for I am merely the son of a once great man and father. That one's out of my normal, how I normally write the stanzas. I tend to do every other line rhymes, but this one just came out the way it did, and it's one of my favorites. So.
Well, I think your father, you honor your father.
Oh, that's yes. Nice. Yeah, we had a wonderful relationship. I mean, amazing. Yeah.
Well, that's a nice poem, a beautiful poem. How about something else?
Well, like I said, the emotional roller coaster, part of what I like to do is undulate the poems and give people a sad one and then a funny one, and to kind of go up and down. That's what the emotional roller coaster is about. So let's give you a kind of funny and true one.
Perfect. I noticed that you like to tack on a surprise ending once in a while.
I like to. I try to, they seem to wrap up, and I like to put a twist if possible. And it's so it tricks you.
I like it.
So this is called Ugly Baby. My sister's baby picture is the ugliest thing you've ever seen. I don't say this to be hurtful. I don't say this to be mean. It's just a fact of life, you would agree with just one glance. In a baby beauty pageant, she wouldn't stand a chance. She looked just like a gremlin with ratty-matty hair. When I show her pictures to people, they simply gasp and stare. Others laugh out loud and say, "What a pathetic creature." When they try to find something positive, she has not one redeeming feature. There's a big lump on her head, like an Elephant Man protrusion, and a big mark on her face, like a really bad contusion. I was laughing at her picture the other day until I turned a bright blue. My mother said, "Let me see that photo." "That's not your sister, that's you." At first, I thought she was kidding, just making a cruel joke. I thought she was trying to annoy me and anger in me provoke. She placed her hand on my head and said, "Do you feel that real big lump?" Then she pointed at the picture, and there was that same bump. I had been dogging myself all these years. What a horrible revelation. But how could it be that I came from this creation? I guess we're all capable of change in one form or another. I'll just do what the psychologists do and blame it on my mother.
Love it.
And that's a true story. I had this little picture and little thing. It was black and white right when, you know, whoever was born, like probably in the hospital, got a little ratty-matty Eskimo thing. And years later, like years and years, like 30, 40 years later, she goes, "That's not your sister, that's you." I'm like, "What? No." It was. Like, I started looking at it, I saw the lump, and I'm like, "Oh my gosh."
So. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Now, your books are illustrated. What I found interesting are the illustrations themselves. How did you do that?
I have been writing these poems, especially for the kids' books, for years, and I wanted to, you know, do the books, but I didn't know an illustrator. I'm an artist, but I really don't do illustration stuff. And so, you know, a friend of mine who was a teacher in Fullerton, art teacher, and she was like, "Have you seen this AI stuff?" And I was like, la-di-da, and didn't mess with it. And all of a sudden, finally, I kind of checked it out. I'm like, "What? Like, it's crazy."
Yeah.
It is amazing. So it allowed me to start doing my illustrated children's books, and with, you know, their poetry, they're just one poem and spread throughout the book, and I just couldn't believe the it's amazing what it can do, and it's just gotten better. And so when I went to write my adult books, a lot of times you end up with a big blank 3/4 of a page, and my girlfriend was like, "Why don't you just, you know, use the thing and do it?" I was like, "That's a lot more work," but then, you know, it really did. And also, I think it lends it to the, again, poetry for real people, because it's, you know, it's nice to have an image, and it does such cool images.
It does need images. And
yeah.
And how do you get it to do that? I mean,
you give it what they call prompts, and you just tell it what to make, and it's all just words.
So I want a baby with a bump on its head or something.
Yeah,
like
I mean,
that.
You just have and sometimes you get real detailed, and other times you don't have to. But yeah, and so it's an amazing tool. Wow.
It's fascinating to me. Why don't you pick something else out? I'm hoping you'll get to some cowboy-type poetry.
Yeah, well, what this next one I'm going to do, because we did a sad one.
Okay.
Then we did a funny one. So now let's kind of do one that's kind of like heartwarming and kind of, you know, love-related. And this is a true story, how I met my girlfriend. And it was in Office Depot, and this is exactly how it happened.
Perfect.
So it's called Office Depot Girl. I was weak-kneed immediately. You had me at high, with that beautiful smile and gleam in your eye. Your long dark hair and mocha skin, the second I saw you, you drew me in. Your long-legged legs and taut, tight arms turned me to mush and killed all my charms. You left me dumbstruck with your cute, coy smile, your cowgirl boots and flirty style. I stumbled when I saw you in your short, flouncy skirt, your curves barely concealed in a form-fitting shirt. I got all flustered and kept glancing your way as I attempted to formulate something charming to say. But all that came to mind was nice cowgirl boots as I gawked and oogled at your lovely attributes. Then you got to the counter, and I did too, and as you did your business, I kept glancing at you. I finished first and waited for a while, pretending to shop while I eyed you from the aisle. But I had a pressing appointment I had to get to, so I pulled out my business card and handed it to you and said, I don't know if you're interested or available, as you glanced up at me with your arms all full. Then I simply turned and left, not knowing what to say, hoping you'd call me or text me someday. I didn't really expect a reply, since I was such a poor communicator, but then you messaged me about a week later. It's been magical ever since. Thank you so much for messaging me. Now our life together has unlimited possibility.
Well, that is, it's a wonderful poem, and she must like that one a lot.
I think she does.
Yeah. Let's get into one of your more like cowboy poetry types.
Yeah, this is the first one I started. I like the romance kind of the deep South and the kind of simple living. And I like the twist of how in these poems, the people that are viewed by the rich people, the rich folk, as they feel sorry for them. But I wanted to twist it and turn on its ear and make it where these poor Cajun Southern folks feel sorry for the rich people because they got it so bad. And so that's, I probably written 5 or 6 or 7 of these, and they're fun. I try to do them in an accent, and I try not to like denigrate, like, sure. But it's, I think it's okay because I do that. I do it from their perspective and how they feel sorry for those rich folk, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think you do a fine job.
So I'm going to try my best with my accent here. We'll see how it goes. It's called When Country Come to Town. When country come to town, we wear our Sunday best, which basically means we actually got dressed. We all pile in the old pickup and bounce down the old dirt road. Sally's got her pet pig and Buddy's got his toad. The dog's a-barking in the back and Ma's wearing her Sunday dress. Pa's chewing on a weed and baby Bobby's a mess. He's got a crusty, snotty nose and ragged old shirt. He almost looks colored because he's covered in dirt. Sally's wearing a dress that kind of looks like a potato sack, and Pa's wearing his cowboy hat with the sweat stain in back. Me, I'm wearing my old jeans with patches on my knees as we rumble down the road under the old cypress trees. It's a humid summer morning in the deep, deep South, and the dust trail from the truck tastes like dirt in my mouth. It collects in my eyes and makes them gooey and gritty. I got crusties in my eye corners as we make our way to the big city, where we'll pick up supplies at the old mercantile and hopefully get enough to get us by for a while. 'Cause summer's coming to an end and the garden's about done, and all that's left are some tomatoes that are baking in the sun. We'll have to plant our winter crop and get it in soon, so's we got greens to eat before the monsoon. As we pass Farmer John's, he got a cow stuck in the ditch. He's trying to get it out by beating it with a switch. He's a cussing and cursing and mad as hell, and as the cow thrashes, it clanks its cowbell. We all wave and holler and pass on by, but he ain't waved back. He don't even try. Then we hit a big pothole and launches us into the sky, and as we all crash back, Mama grabs for her pie. She saves her prized possession, her famous apple pie. You ain't tasted heaven till you's given her a try. She won the blue ribbon at the Louse County Fair, where the judge said it was the best one there. And now she's known as the Apple Pie Queen, and it made her smile the biggest smile you ever seen. As we pull into town and pull up to the church, the engine coughs and sputters and lunges with a lurch. Then we all pile out and make our way through the door of the old Baptist church and walk down the wood plank floor. We all line up in the pew like ducks in a row, and the rich city folks act like they don't know who we is or where we come from. They think they're all smart and we're all dumb. But nice Pastor Joe swings us a smile and welcomes us all with his smooth, accepting style. As he's preaching about Jesus and all them bad Jews, Bobby starts getting fidgety and climbs under the pews, searching for gold, some old chewed up chewing gum. After a while, he finally got him some, and picks it off the pew and pops it in his mouth. In some places, that ain't proper, but it's okay in the South. Then Mama grabs his arm and shoves him back in his seat and tells him to stop or he'll get his butt beat. And through the whole sermon, I've been making eyes with Mary Jo. She's taking a shining to me, but no one else know. And after the sermon, Mama gives Pastor his gift, her prized apple pie, and he gobbles it down swift. We say bye to Pastor Joe, and I'll head to the truck and hope it'll start, since we got some good luck. But we don't, so we all line up and give her a good shove. Pa pops the clutch, and Ma prays to God above. And it finally kicks to life with a big bang and some smoke. Then we all run and jump in and wave to them rich folk. Then we rumble into town to the old mercantile. Mama says to be good, because we're going to be here for a while. And as she does her shopping, Pa trades for chewing tobacco with his homemade moonshine and some guy that we don't know. Then we make our way back home to the light of the southern sunset and past fields of dried corn stalks that ain't been cut yet. And I'm lulled off to sleep as we travel and ride with Bobby at my feet and my hound dog at my side.
Love it. It reminds me a little bit of the Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. And I used to watch that as a kid, so yeah.
So how do you come up with an idea like that for a poem?
You know, sometimes I wake up, I'm a morning person, and that's mm-hmm. where my clarity and my brain is at point. And so sometimes I'll just get a thought. Sometimes I'll hear in a song a line, or a line. Sometimes I'll mishear a line, and then I like the way I had it, and then write a poem. But sometimes they just come to me. I just get a funny idea, and like this, just and then they just flow out of me. Yeah. I just put my pencil into the paper, and it just writes it out. I don't even stop. It just from beginning to end. Sometimes sometimes I have to work them. Sometimes they're more complex, and they take a while, and I got to look. Yeah. And get some words that rhyme. And it's interesting I'm glad I rhyme, because rhyming takes me where I wouldn't have gone by looking up a word and I'll look on this, it's called Rhyme Zone online, and you put in a word mm-hmm. and it gives you all the words that rhyme with it. And I'll look through the list and I'll see a word, and that sparks a new idea.
Oh, I like it.
And a new direction.
Sure.
And usually they're way better than I would have thought. And it just makes me chuckle sometimes. I'll be like, oh, then I could do that. And so it's real fun. It's like just, I'm along for the ride. It's like I'm channeling it.
Oh, you know? That's so neat. I like that. So you go to a list of words that rhyme, and they trigger ideas.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just go through the list, and like one will jump out at me, and and I'll be like, oh, that's where I could go there, you know, and it's...
Well, why don't you look through your list or your book there, and I'm going to remind listeners what they're listening to, and we'll get back to it. You're listening to KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio. This is Jim Dowling. The show is Write Stuff. I've got Eric Nansen, one of our local poets, here in the studio, and he's sharing his work with us today. And so Eric is... I hope you get to one called Feathered Knife, because that one in particular is one of my favorites. I know it's short, but
yeah,
we can fit that in. I hope
find it here. I live in Oak Run, and I have a big, huge Alaskan open view of this big gorge, and the buzzards fly out there. They glide out there. You never see them even flap their wings. They ride those thermals, and amazing. They're like, Jim used to...
Well, I used to hang glide.
And it's just like that. And and my house is placed high, so they're kind of at eye level. So it's just like watching this show. I was jealous of them, so that this poem came to... So it's called A Feathered Knife. A feathered knife slices through the night, riding the thermals, suspended in flight. Smooth as silk and subtle as a breeze, he slips through the sky, flowing through the trees. frozen in flight like a statue of stone, not a twitch of muscle or movement of bone. Effortless as a breath and pure as new snow, he glides through the sky as liquid would flow. No sound to be heard but the quiet of night, this magnificent bird, the master of flight.
Inspired by vultures.
Yeah.
They're just, well, they're great flyers.
Oh, yeah, and amazing. The only time you see them flap their wings is when they're in a tree and then they're just taking off. And then after that, they never flap their wings again.
They just can find the thermals.
And it's really crazy out there because we have a lot of wind and you can just see them. They'll just go and then all of a sudden they'll just pop up 10 feet. Just they just glide along. So
when I used to hang glide, we'd look for vultures. They knew where the thermals were.
Yeah.
But they were very shy. They always took off. I never was able to get close to them. But anyway, great poem. Love it.
Oh, thank you. So I got another one here that I'm just trying to keep on that up and down wave. This one's kind of, I've changed throughout. I've been writing. I have over like 700 poems I've written and probably 200 that are partially written. I've kind of found through the years, because I've probably been doing this for like 16, 17, 18 years now, and I kind of changed. I started getting these ones where I describing places and atmospheres and stuff. So this one was one that I really liked. It's called Exotic Lands. On the other side of the ocean, there's a very magical place with pungent smells and spices and veils upon their face. Their gowns are ruby colors, and they have henna on their skin. Their buildings have onion domes and colorful tile within. They have many exotic gods cast in sculptures of gold and scripts carved in stones that are many centuries old. They bathe in ancient rivers filled with fantasy and lore. They float candles in their waters and wash their clothes upon its shore. Their bazaars are packed with people and camels carrying goods upon their backs, with booths of exotic foods and colorful textiles stored in stacks. The cramped walkways are like a labyrinth, a multi-layered maze, and the smoke from the hookahs fills the air with haze. The sitar plays a tune and the flute charms a snake. As it rises from the basket, you realize it's not fake. Their heads are wrapped in turbans and their skin is leather brown. The sun swelters overhead and bakes the ancient town. The vendors sell nuts and dates and olives piled high. They scream in foreign tongues at the shoppers passing by. There's wooden carts pulled by donkeys filled with hand-woven rugs and old friends giving greetings with kisses and hugs. Little children dart like mice weaving through the crowd, their parents' warnings unheard because it's too loud. As the sun starts to set, the smell of curry fills the air as families gather together for the evening meal they share. The heat gives way to coolness in a star-filled night. There's a glow in the windows from the flickering candlelight. As the city falls asleep, the lights are all snuffed out, and there's a murmur of Hindu prayers from the religiously devout. The city is lulled into a trance as people slip into their dreams, and the lands are dimly lit by magical moonbeams.
Well, that certainly transports us to another world. What did you say the title was of that one?
The what?
What's the title?
That's called Exotic Lands.
Exotic Lands.
Exotic Lands.
And so what lands are we talking about? Somewhere in the Middle East?
Yeah, like Morocco, Egypt.
Well, that's what comes to mind.
Yeah, okay. Kind of something like that. Like I said, I've never been there. It's just, I feel like these are channeling through me from other people.
Yeah, who knows where it comes from.
But I don't know. So that's what this next one's kind of about. I dated a therapist for a while, and she had like a live workspace. And so if I get up early in the morning and I didn't want to rouse her, so I'd go in her office and sit in the chair that her patients were in. And these poems would come to me of some really bad things and just
sure,
and
sure,
like
sure.
I would read them to her. She goes, "I swear you're channeling that chair."
Oh, perfect.
And I was just like, "I don't know." They just, well, but I didn't. It yeah. didn't get them as like bad. It wasn't like I was reliving what they'd done. It just came to me. I just said, "I'm supposed to write this down." So
okay.
So this poem's about that.
Okay.
And it's called Channeling the Chair. I used to date a therapist who worked out of her home, and when I got up early, in her office I would roam. Inevitably, I was drawn to her patient's chair, where I would channel the people who before me sat there. It wasn't something I really felt, I would just start to write. It's like their life was a play, and I their playwright. Story after story would start to unfold, and on my paper their stories would be told. Poems of people wronged and abused, innocent people unjustly used. Stories of sadness, accounts of such pain, and they just kept coming again and again. When I would share them with my girlfriend, she would stand there and stare and say, "I swear you're channeling that chair." Scenes of psychosis and people going mad, so many stories that were senseless and sad. All of life's atrocities played out like a play, and I would get a different one each new day. That chair seemed to awaken a different part of me, and even without it, I'm still able to see the strife of people that I never knew. Have you sat in that chair? Is this poem about you?
Yeah, that's very perceptive. The chair has a history.
Yeah. And it was like I said, and she kind of dealt with the worst of the worst.
Oh, boy.
And a lot of
yeah.
bad stuff. With
so Eric, if people want to listen to you, read your poetry, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the poetry scene here in Reading. I know there's a Poetry Nights Out. It's the third Wednesday of each month at Art Hunger in Viva Downtown. So, you attend those regularly?
Oh, yes, definitely, yeah.
Good.
Yeah, that's the old Odd Fellows Hall for the old-timers, so.
So, folks, if you're liking what you heard today and would like to hear more and maybe some other poets, it's the third Wednesday at, what is it, what time does it start? About 7 o'clock, I think?
7 to 8:30, yes.
7 to 8:30.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we have time for something really short here, and then we'll sign off.
Okay. Let's do a kind of scary one. It's called Haunted Haiti.
Okay.
Welcome to Haiti, the dark, mysterious side, where no one can run and no one can hide, where voodoo magic reigns supreme, and the poke of a doll can make you scream, where chickens are sacrificed and their blood is let out, and voodoo priestesses scream and shout, where cauldrons are filled with everything foul, like tongues of lizard and eyes of owl, raven rings and warts of frog, brains of bat and rabid dog, are cobbled together and stirred and boiled. Spells are cast and plans are foiled. Witches dance around the fire, casting spells of fear and desire. They talk in tongues and chant and scream. They get in your head and make you scream. Horrible nightmares with your eyes gouged out and your lips sewn together so you can't even shout. Their eyes roll back and they almost look dead. Their bodies are all painted and they have feathers in their head. Their bodies are possessed and spasm and shake. They writhe around like a dying snake until they collapse and fall to the ground. Then it's eerily quiet without a sound. And when the sun rises, it all disappears. Everything except your darkest fears.
Good Halloween type poem.
Yeah.
Keep that one away from the little kids. Yeah, good job. Hey, I really appreciate you coming in.
Yeah, Eric. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks for sharing your poetry with
yeah.
us.
Yeah, and like I said, as you pointed out, you know, my books are on Amazon, and also I have 4 children's books that are illustrated that are real fun also that are on there.
And next time we get you on, we'll talk about your woodwork because you're a very talented woodworker,
thank you.
Too.
Sounds good.
And you've been listening to KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio. That is community-supported radio. If you'd like to help us out with a donation, just go to kkrn.org, hit that donate button. There's another way, too. you've got a car, a truck, maybe a motorcycle, even a boat, you can go to careasy.org. That's careasy, one word, .org. They'll walk you through it, and you'll be helping us out with a really nice donation. Been a nice night. Thanks for coming in, Eric. And
Well, thank you, Jim, for the invite, and it was very fun.
We'll sign off for the evening.